sack. Is that all you get for your money? And if that's what you have in mind, yeah, if that's what you're all about, good luck moving up, 'cause I'm moving out.
Good morning and welcome to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move on this Thanksgiving Saturday. I love this Saturday, this great weekend. You're listening to Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Real Estate team, and I'm here with Becky Ivins. Becky, how was your Thanksgiving?
Well, it was wonderful.
Good.
Very small compared to our typical Thanksgiving, but very relaxing because it was small.
Yeah, yeah. So. That's what, you know, I know that today, so we're getting together with family today. So this was our time to be able to get together. And we have a smaller turkey, smaller gathering, but delighted to be able to even do it. Like, just what a great thing.
See, we typically have, in our immediate family, like my kids and grandkids, we have 25 people.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. So turns out that half of them were there, but we separated into different rooms.
Yeah. Does everybody just keep separate?
And,
yeah.
We kind of into household rooms, you know, to eat because nobody had a mask on during the actual dinner. But anyway, we've had an interesting about 3 weeks at our house.
Yeah.
Yeah, you too, huh?
Yep.
Yep. We spread the COVID around, and my husband and I are recovering. Jim's pretty much recovered, and I'm still a little bit tired, but tested negative.
Yay.
So, yay, yay.
Yeah.
And how about you're feeling strong?
Yeah, yeah. Back to the normal part of it. Glad that it was only minor symptoms with it and finally got hit with the wave of it and glad to be through it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. Ron, how have you been? I've been Ron Shalott
really
here.
Been really good.
Good.
Having lots of fun, enjoying this beautiful weather.
Right.
And just celebrating, being thankful, really. You know, this is a time of Thanksgiving, and with all the junk that's gone on this year, this is a great time just to be thankful, to be here and to be with people that you care about and really enjoy being with.
So, do we have a topic today? Ron Shalott is my personal and corporate attorney, and we talk a lot, and we text, and we email quite a lot, because I like prevention instead of having to call Ron for defense.
Proactive behavior versus reactive.
Advice instead of. There's not a lot of legal stuff that. I mean, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't. I don't presume to be, so I don't go around practicing law. And our contract forms are extremely limited as to what we can and can't do.
Mm-hmm.
The contract forms used to, back in the day when I started selling real estate, it was a legal size instead of a letter size. They came with, oh my gosh, I think it was 5 or 6, maybe even 7 copies of NCR, the carbonless copies.
Right?
Is that what you called them?
Carbonless carbon copies.
Carbonless carbon.
Yeah.
Well, now when I first started, you had to actually use carbon paper. And for those of you who don't know what carbon paper is,
Google it.
Yeah, there you go. But you had to press really hard to get through that many copies to begin with. And we had one contract form. It was 1 page long. And then we had a financing addendum that had all the financing options on it, and you did a check mark. There was lots of write-in spaces, though. It was not like our contract form is today. There was a lot of room for someone to start practicing law, I will tell you. But our contract form, it had check marks at the top of it. And it's FHA, VA, conventional.
Mm-hmm.
And, or cash. Even cash had an addendum back then.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh. Cash, seller, carry, second mortgage. We had two contract forms for financing. One was pretty much a cash or seller carry, and the other one was financing, a traditional financing method. So it was just, and we didn't have home inspections.
When did that come into play? When did home inspections start?
We did plumbing inspections.
Okay.
Just plumbing inspections. And then fairly soon, I mean, I've known Hayes Electric since I've been an adult. So I asked Hayes Electric, I said, what would you charge to do an electrical inspection of a house? You ready for how long ago this has been? $40. They charged $40 to do an electrical inspection. And I don't think anyone was really doing electrical inspections back then. And then heat and air started coming in, and you would have separate inspections for all those.
So did you have to write that out into the contract?
Yes, you would write out.
Because now our contracts spells out
exactly
how long you have to inspect, what you can expect. You can add different things that need inspection that might be unique to the property.
Well, and it's not just inspections anymore. Our contract form now reads investigations, inspections, and reviews.
Mm-hmm.
So you can review the disclosure. You can review the flood map. You can investigate several things, like sewer backups in the neighborhood, Megan's Law, which is the sex offender registry thing,
right,
to where you might not want to be right next door to one. You might want the effort to be made to at least walk three or four, houses.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Everyone's different, and it affects some people more than others as to what the weight they put on different items of inspection. Some people get real hung up on structure. Mm-hmm. Some people get real hung up on drainage. And of course, I think, why aren't you checking some of the public records here to see what has happened in the neighborhood? What kind of overall plan is there for drainage in the neighborhood, especially the older neighborhoods? So there's a lot to do, but our contract form has changed.
There were inspections, I know, in the early 80s. Bought a house back then, and there was an inspection at that time, but there wasn't not the form, the disclosure form. And at that time, the law was caveat emptor, let the buyer beware.
Yes, for sure.
So it was a whole different era with some different doctrines, and now it's changed quite a bit with the inspections and what you are now on notice of or capable of finding out that you would never have found out back then.
No.
Except by living there.
Even to find out zoning of a property, you had to literally go downtown, physically go into a building and check the zoning maps. And to find out legal description, you had to literally go downtown into the courthouse and check the great big books. That was kind of like my workout back in the day. Those books were pretty heavy.
Sure, we did that too. We officed downtown originally, and that would be one of my tasks would be to go into the county clerk's office and to open up the different books, to check title, to check legal descriptions. The Metropolitan Public Library downtown in that tall building was my other home because I go there many times to research things about companies and places and all kinds of things that we would have some type of case about or involving. And used to spend a lot of time in libraries, plus in law libraries too, obviously.
Right. So our guest today is Ron Shalott. I'm going to invite you to call if you have a question for us. 840-1000. It's 405-840-1000.
And we'll be right back with Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move and News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of Becky Ivins Movers Real Estate. You can go to BeckyIvins.com and click on Becky's Favorites.
And, that's really the easiest way.
Easiest way.
It.
Great way to get a hold of us. And we're getting Dean back on the line, and we'll see. But we're here with Ron Shalhot, who is our money man. No, not our money man. Our lawyer man.
Legal man.
Legal.
Lawman.
Our legal
I can't be
eagle.
Lawman. I mean, I'd have to have a star, a sheriff.
You would have to, and kind of walk with a gait and a certain. Yeah. You could pull it off, Ron. Yeah. I believe in you.
Yeah. So, I always wanted to grow up to be a sheriff, I guess. when we're looking at people coming in and seeing you, and we were talking on the break about that, the question that I still get, even now, for however many years I've been practicing law, almost 40 years, is I've got a house. Do I do a will or do I need a trust? And that's kind of where we're going with this next while we're waiting for Dean to get here and tell us about the money issues. But that idea, it's been around for quite some time now, and really it started back in the East Coast and the West Coast, New York and the L.A., California region, where probates were so slow, taking years to get through is what I understand. And consequently, the lawyers were figuring out different ways to transfer assets from one point to the other, because that's what we're really talking about, is transfer of assets from a person to another, parent to child, et cetera. So they came up with this concept of creating a trust and putting things into a trust that would have a disposition clause where when a condition occurred, for example, death, that the property within the trust would then transfer or be disposed of to another person or another place. And so that's how that all got started with a trust concept as opposed to a will, which goes through the court methodology.
I wonder if you can get a mortgage if your property is in the name of a trust.
Yeah.
Well, we're here with Ron Shalhot, and we're talking about a little bit about wills and trust and the title to your property. And that's the first thing that we always check when someone wants to sell a property is who's in title, right?
Yeah.
And it's very often surprising to the property owner or who thinks they're the property owner.
They think they're the property owner, but they discover they're not on title.
Right.
Yeah.
So how does that happen, Ron?
Well, it's very important that, of course, you have a clear and marketable title and that the person who is going to be selling the property has that title, because they're the person, according to law, that has the ownership interest in the property and has something to transfer. We can get into a lot of different aspects about what if they are a co-owner, that kind of thing, but really it gets down to looking to see who is the title owner. And if, for example, somebody would have a trust and have real property into a trust, the trust would be the owner who has the authority. Well, it is the person who is the trustee. And that may not necessarily be the occupant. That may not necessarily be the person who originally purchased it, because they may have put it into a trust with a different trustee. And that's what you would then look at, is not only who owns it, but with regard to a trust, or if it's in a limited liability company, who has the authority for that entity to act. And so as realtors, you have that need to find that out before you contract to list the property, because you don't want to list a property for someone who has no authority to sell it.
True. And then the first one of the first meeting that I have with someone who wants to sell their property, once we've determined who the owner of the property is, then we talk about the check's going to be made payable to the owner of the property. Whatever entity, whether it be an individual or some kind of legal entity that owns that property, that check is going to be made payable to that. We recently had one where, boy, the heir of the property was pretty upset because they're walking around with a check they cannot deposit anywhere.
You can get into the checks made out to the
estate.
Trust, for example.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, it was a pending estate, and the heir may be the sole heir, maybe the sole beneficiary, but until that estate is resolved, it's still in the name of the estate, and the court has control over it. And that's really the big difference between the will and the trust. With the will, you go through the court process, the probate process. With the trust, you don't go through the probate process. So it's a cleaner transfer from point A to point B. But, yes, you need to let that person know that if they're going to sell that property, the check is going to be made out in the name of the owner. And if it's a husband and wife and only the wife is on the property, that's where the check's going to be made out to.
Well, and then not that the husband might not have marital, what's it called?
Rights.
Marital rights to part of the ownership proceeds of that, right?
But that's something that had to be determined, decided, and not necessarily something that you would be able to discern or even make a ruling on.
Mm-hmm.
The closing company has to go with what's the name on the title, because that's what they rely upon. And they've done the title opinion to see who is on that title.
And you cannot, in an instant, walk into a bank and say, I want to set up an account for the estate of this person, or I want to set up an account for this trust. It takes about a month to get those things done.
It used to be real fast, but since 9/11, the Patriot right. Act, it's a lot slower now.
Yes. So.
Wow. Walk around with a check you can't cash. We'll be right back with more with Ron Shalhot on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. News Radio 1000 KTOK. Welcome back to Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. This is Mark Carr, team member of the Becky Ivins Movers Real Estate, and here with Becky Ivins. And we're here with Ron Shalhot, we're talking about wills and trust. And I got to tell you, this is a topic that I'm always learning new things about and discovering.
Well, all of us that are not attorneys continue to learn things because there's nuances and there's facts behind all this that seems pretty simple, but mm-hmm. it's not simple.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it. But we're lucky to have Ron Shalhot, attorney at law. And if you want to talk to Ron and you have a question for him, call him. It's 528-2890. Go to BeckyIvins.com and you're going to just find Ron's information. Look at the little tabs across the top of the page and it just says favorites. I think it's Becky's
does.
Favorites.
It says Becky's favorites.
Okay.
Yep.
So you can find all my favorites there.
Yep. It's time for the word of the day, brought to you by Robbins Roofing, where their word every day is trust. You can trust Robbins Roofing from a small repair to a complete replacement. You can give them a call at 728-3700. That's 728-3700. And if you need your roof inspected, just give them a call. They're so good at that.
One of our listings had like a branch of a tree all the way through it.
Yeah.
And another, through the shingles, the decking, into the attic, down, came back out through the soffit.
Oh, my goodness.
And another listing that I went out to list was described to me as having a nice patio backyard and stuff. Well, the patio had ripped off the back of the house and was laying out in the yard, but it took with it the electrical mast and it took with it the siding on the house so that squirrels could just crawl in and out of there into the attic space. So, of course, I got somebody is going out on Monday to fix the siding, at least get that sealed up so that we can do it right. But
well, I've been accused of having squirrels in the attic, but
yeah,
I think that's a whole different topic.
It
Ron, what's our word of the day?
Well, I will mention one other thing before we get to the word of the day is that I have a little bit of an unusual office because when you call my office, unless you get the voicemail, which you may, it's on 24/7, but you will talk to me. You will not call and talk to a legal assistant or a secretary or some receptionist who could be anywhere in the country because we've got some receptionist program. No. Instead, you will talk to me because your call is important to me. And that's a little bit different office concept than than many have. But it's important to me that you talk to me and that I hear what your situation is, decide whether I can be of assistance or not. But to get to the word of the day, by the way, we've talked a little bit about this already. The difference between having a will or trust is that with a will, it would have to go to court with probate. Now, probate is a common term that lawyers use, but even we lawyers overuse it. So probate is our word of the day. And Becky, you should remember this one because we've had this before at least once, maybe twice. Mark, I don't know if you've had this one or not.
I'm going to be honest that probate is one of those words that I hear used all the time. And I'm going, is that being used in the right context?
Well, you think about probing, you know, an examination, looking into something. So when a person dies, the question is, did they have a will or not? Your last will and testament, your testimony, your last legal statement, or not. So you go into court to first off find out, was there will or not? And secondly, if there is a document that purports to be a will, I mean, it could be all in handwriting and still be a will, or one of these fancy type things, then the court will examine that to see if that indeed was the last will and testament, or if there's something else out there. And that's why you send notice to heirs by mail and you publish it in the newspaper that the will's been presented. That examination and determination of whether there's a will and whether this is that last will, that is probate. It means to prove. It proves this is the last will and testament. Because once that's done, once that will is admitted to probate, has been proven sufficiently to a court, that is the document that the court's going to use to determine what happens to the stuff that's in the estate. So, and when you die, if you don't have it in some other entity, it goes into your estate automatically, and it's just a matter of a court trying to administer it out. The rest of it, after the probate, really is technically estate administration. So really the probate is whether there's a will or not and admitting the court in. After that, it's all called estate administration. But we overuse it too.
It sounds like to me like it would be like we're talking about the difference between will and trust. But if you go in and have to take it to probate, I mean, that sounds costly and time consuming to do that versus being in trust.
There is a cost to probate. Court costs can be anywhere from $400 to $700-$800, depending upon how much you do inside the probate. Attorney's fees, escalate depending upon the complexity of it. And that's where the expense is. A will itself is not terribly expensive to create, but the real cost is in the probate. On the trust, it's the flip side. Because a trust, you're creating an expansive document to govern while people are alive and then what happens if they become incapacitated or pass away and property goes in and out and putting property into the trust. Consequently, the cost in a trust is at the beginning. At the end, the cost of dispersing it out, it's there, but it's not as much as a probate. So there was several times where I've sat down, just put pen to paper and go, okay, which one is cheaper? Which one's less expensive?
It's kind of like pre-tax, post-tax.
Right.
It's which one do you want to pay up front or pay afterwards.
Exactly, and some of it depends upon a lot of factors, such as what are you going to be ending up with, things like that. But overall, the cost isn't necessarily significant, especially the cost over time with money. But you got to remember, too, if you do a trust today, and I know, Mark, with all your wealth and holdings, et cetera, but then later on when you're 120 years old and you're down to just a couple sticks of furniture and a T-shirt, then that trust may not be particularly helpful for you.
Yeah.
Because you may have exhausted all of your assets.
So it's kind of like the more assets you have, the more a trust may make more sense? Is that what?
It can make more sense that way, but also things such as a blended family.
Yeah.
If you or your spouse have kids from a prior relationship or other relationships, or if you're trying to keep things out of the public eye because a trust is a private matter, not in the public court system. If you want to create several trusts and you want your first couple million to go to your kids, but the other 10 million, you want to give to the Society for the Protection of Reindeer and Gerbils. You know, you can do that. It's a private trust. Your kids will never know about that $10 million going to help those little fuzzy creatures in Santa's reindeers.
Yeah, I don't think my kids, you know, we last night when we had Thanksgiving, we always ask our kids about every 3 or 4 years, we'll say, is there anything that you want that we have? Because we're getting rid of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to get rid of something that one of the kids actually wants. So they put stickers, they put sticky notes. We've got a little portable bar that we must have mentioned at some point to Jim's dad that Jim must have said something about, I'd like to have that when you don't need it anymore. And so there was a little yellow sticky note on the inside of that cabinet that says, when I croak, this goes to Jim, Dad. So what is so funny is we got a grand piano recently, and it's nice and it sounds wonderful. And as we were sitting there eating Thanksgiving dinner last night, one of the grandkids says, B, where's your sticky notes? I said, how come? She goes, I kind of want to put my name on that piano. And I said, whichever child or grandchild is most accomplished at playing that piano at the time I die can have that piano.
Start taking lessons now.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Well, we kind of laugh about it, and it's fun stories. But I do have that serious conversation with clients when we talk about these type of things, about disposing of items in your house, things of that nature. One of the things I do tell them is that when you are at the point of downsizing a bit, isn't it more fun to give that special item to that child or grandchild and to see their appreciation and their smile and the love that you have for them instead of getting it from a lawyer on a piece of paper?
Right.
Yeah. After you've passed away. It's just there's something about you giving it to them and they remember, oh, Grandma or Grandpa gave this to me. I remember that day very well, as opposed to it's in the will and the lawyer, you know, says, well, you get this.
So. Well, and, you know, Jim's and my family are polar opposites. One of our families was very protective of their money, definitely didn't want anybody to know anything about what they had or didn't have. And everyone assumed they had more than they did, I think. And then the other was very generous with their money, and they actually had more money. And they gave things as they went. And their whole philosophy of life was, well, we would rather see what the kids do with it now and see them enjoy it. All we need is enough to bury us, you know, when we die. So we don't need to amass a lot of wealth. We just need to, because they had guaranteed incomes. And so it's different how different people look at their whole estate giving. And it's almost time for a break, but I just have to say a little thank you to my husband of 50 years. Last night, we were quarantined together with COVID on our 50th anniversary. So we didn't get to do any celebrating, really. We did our best to get up and get water and a thermometer. But last night, he sang the song to me with all the kids and grandkids there. Now, not all of them, but half of them. That he sang to me right before I walked down the aisle when we got married 50 years ago.
Oh, wow.
He sang Walk Hand in Hand with Me. He said he had a hard time finding that instrumental music, but that was a very special moment. So
that's
thank
sweet.
You, Jim Ivins. So we're going to return with more right after this on Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move, News Radio 1000 KTOK.
Walk hand in hand with me through all eternity.
Some days it seems like an eternity.
I'm going to tell you, Becky, you and Jim are one of the cutest couples.
Aw.
You guys are so, you're both so sweet. And I could see Jim singing this to you.
Oh, he just belted it out.
I love it.
Yeah. And I said, Jim, your voice didn't even crack. He said, did it before? I said, yeah, on your third note.
Well, Jim Ivins, if you're listening, you are top shelf in my book and in lots of people's books.
Well, and I'll tell you, I'm very fortunate to have found somebody that respects me, that I can respect, and the love has always been there.
Yeah.
So that's terrific. Okay. We are rounding the corner and headed for home.
And we're here with Ron Shalott talking about wills and trust.
And how you should hold title to your property.
Yes.
And do you know how you hold title to your property?
First key in life, know what you own.
Know what you own, where it's titled at, certainly. That's the most important thing. As far as the will or the trust, so what's the answer to that question? The answer, this is a very lawyer-esque answer, there is no right answer for everything. There's no one-size-fits-all answer. And that's why you need to sit down with legal counsel, go over your situation, and make a decision and understand what you're doing. I am tired. I really am tired of people coming in with a trust binder and finding out that the property was never placed in the trust. And I look at this binder and you almost start crying going, these people paid good money, got this beautiful binder and all that, didn't put it in there. And now we have to probate and hope we have a will and hope we have a will that pours over into the trust or does something appropriate with the property. I do not like to see those, but I'm seeing way too many of them, and that makes me afraid that there are a lot more out there that I'm not seeing. So if you're going to have a trust, you got to put it into the trust.
And Ron, now, we ran into something one time to where we found the will that was, we found the deed to the property where the individual had deeded the property over into a trust. And we found this document in that big binder that it was just stuffed in an inside pocket. However, it had not been filed of record.
Correct. Yeah.
And the owner was deceased. Can you file it after death?
No, it doesn't transfer at that point. He dies with the property.
Yeah.
Because if he didn't file it, the presumption is that he did not mean to file it, did not mean to transfer the property. Even though everything looks like it did, you have to take the record for what it is. You cannot presume intent. We've had this situation called desk drawer deeds where people will deed property and say, I put this in your desk drawer when I'm dead, then file this and I'll avoid probate. It doesn't work that way because it automatically flows into your estate, and now it's under court jurisdiction. And you have to really know what you're doing and being careful. I know people that do now the transfer on death deed, which sounds like a great thing, the Non-Testamentary Transfer of Property Act, where it transfers automatically on death outside of probate. But you got to be careful about those things, because if you leave it to more than one person, for example, that may inhibit the sale of the property later on. What if one of those that you leave it to has significant debts or judgment against them? Well, that can be very difficult, as opposed to putting it into a probate or putting it into a trust where the trust or the probate can manage or liquidate the property and then figure out what to do with the proceeds and the assets. So you really have to be careful about what you're doing, not just assume that you read an article or hear something from a friend and this is the cat's meow, if I can use that term, or the way to go, because you really need to have a good overall plan.
Well, and then the transfer on death deed has to have an affidavit signed within, was it 6 or 9 months or
within
something?
Within 9 months to accept it, yes. Otherwise, it goes back into the estate. And if you get a situation where one of the recipients can't be found.
Well, or one of the owners of the property, I've had this happen before, the owner, the only person entitled to the property is the wife. She does a transfer on death deed to the son, and she dies. You would think that just transfers to the son. However, she has a husband who has marital rights to that property.
Who has a marital interest, yeah.
Marital interest, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it gets complicated because, and the son was not his son, of course. She
right.
was. So it
of course, that would make it too easy.
That would make it too easy, yeah.
And that's what we were talking about, too, with Mark, that you have to be careful when you've got blended families where you've got children from other relationships, other marriages, because wills, those can be changed after one of the spouses passes away. So many times we'll set up a trust that will become irrevocable on the death of one of the spouses, and that will lock it in.
Yeah.
Becomes irrevocable as opposed to remain revocable. There are sometimes you want to keep it revocable so that the surviving spouse isn't hamstrung, but in some situations you want to make it irrevocable.
Yeah, before we close out here, it's just a warning. Call Ron Shalhot. Don't try to do this on your own. There's lots of dangers to avoid here. You can find out anything at BeckyIvins.com. Click Becky's Favorites. Thank you, Ron. Always tremendous. Thanks for being with us at Oklahoma Real Estate on the Move. We'll see you next week.